you go. So, Professor Lea Vosko is a Canada Research Chair in the Political Economy of Gender and Work at York University and one of the world's leading scholars on labor market insecurity, the regulation of work, the gendering of work relations, and not least the development of the standard employment relationship. She has published widely in a number of journals and is the author of books such as Managing the Margins, Gender, Citizenship, and International Regulation of Precarious Employment, and is co-editor of Liberating Temporariness, Migration, Work, and Citizenship in an Age of Insecurity. We are absolutely delighted to have you here. And yeah, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me? Good. All right, well, thanks very much for the invitation from researchers involved in the impact of temporary work agencies on the politics of work, and especially Anders for his generous coordination efforts and for the invitation to participate with you here today. It's a pleasure for me to be here, and if I miss an odd word, I'm a little bit jet-lagged. Preparing for this conference has offered me a really great opportunity to reflect on some work that I've been doing on the nature and shape of the standard employment relationship and the rise of precarious employment for the last couple of decades. And it's also given me a chance to probe more deeply developments in a form of employment, often characterized by labor market insecurity, that arguably represents a barometer of change in labor markets, as well as challenges to employment norms, hence the subtitle to my talk. This form of employment is, of course, temporary agency work, and it's been very important to me since I published my first book on temporary work in 2000. So in my talk, what I want to do is I want to compare and contrast changing employment norms alongside approaches to the regulation of temporary agency work in Norway and Canada, setting these cases in their respective national and regional contexts. Where approaches to the regulation of temporary agency work are concerned, in exploring the Canadian situation, I'll focus on developments in Ontario. In Canada, the regulation of labor is largely a provincial matter. And since Ontario is Canada's largest and most populous, as well as most industrial diverse province, as well as home to the largest share of immigrants in Canada, it's also a crucial site of exploration, and I think it represents quite an interesting comparator to Norway. Ontario and Norway also have followed somewhat similar paths historically, where approaches to the regulation of temporary agency work is concerned. However, against the backdrop of a much more weakly institutionalized standard employment relationship, or I'll just call it SER, Ontario came to legitimize temporary agency work earlier than Norway. Ontario's experience, I would argue, therefore, highlights challenges to limiting labor market insecurity among temporary agency workers that could be on the horizon for Norway, as well as, I think, what is even more important, pitfalls of particular regulatory responses. Where mitigating the precariousness associated with temporary agency work is concerned, even though Ontario has made a range of modest improvements in its regulation since 2010, two persistent challenges might serve as warning bells, perhaps for Norway. Disparities in the wage levels of temporary agency workers and workers in permanent employment relationships, and problems with attributing and allocating employment-related responsibility for minimum employment standards. Anders spoke about the triangular relationship, and this is what I am referring to here. Such challenges highlight the importance of augmenting aspects of Norwegian approach, this is from an outsider, of course, but to regulation that seek to maintain a strong and inclusive SER, by which I mean along the lines of gender and citizenship and age and other social markers, by making the conditions of temporary agency work approximate SER-associated securities, and thereby legitimizing, extending legitimacy to temporary agency work without sanctioning precariousness among temporary agency workers. So Ontario's experience with wage disparities and problems with attributing responsibility highlight in particular the importance of, I would argue, robust and airtight commitments to joint and several liability, as well as meaningful rights and meaningful limits, on hiring in Norway. a dual approach to regulating temporary agency work aimed at upholding an inclusive SER as a model and legitimizing temporary work agencies without sanctioning precarious temporary agency work, in my view, after a fair number of years of study, is the best protection against the lowering of the bottom of the labor market. So in what follows, I'll develop these contentions in six parts. First, what I'll do is I'll say a little bit about my concepts. Second, I'll sketch the contours of the SER and forms of employment often associated with precarious employment in Norway and Ontario. And here I'll highlight differences in the form that the SER has taken, as well as the magnitude of its closest proxy. I'll suggest that whereas Norway has a relatively strong SER model, developments in Ontario reflect more of what I would call a tiered SER model, where aspects of the employment relationship characteristic of temporary agency work, which I talk about as the TER elsewhere, are coming to characterize a greater variety of non-standard forms of employment. And while the SER is still dominant in Ontario, this norm is eroding. Am I speaking too quickly? Standard employment relationship, sorry. Yeah, standard employment relationship. I'll use the SER as a short form to save a few words. Third, I'll present a portrait of temporary agency work in Ontario and Norway, observing its incremental growth and highlighting its precarious character in both contexts in some respects. And fourth, honing in on Ontario, I'll give a bit of a sense of the current regulatory approach we see there. Fifth, I'll summarize my very impressionistic understanding of what is happening in Norway at the moment. And you must apologize if I misinterpret Norwegian developments. I'm a newcomer to the study of temporary agency work in Norway. And sixth, based on the Ontario case, I'll highlight what I view to be promising approaches to ensuring the quality or augmenting the quality of temporary agency work in Norway based on the Ontario case. So I want to start by defining a few of these concepts upon which I will rely in what follows. And I want to do so because some of them may not be new to you, quite the opposite. I assume they may be familiar. And familiarity tends to breed misunderstanding when we use the same labels for to describe quite different phenomena. So indeed, one of the leading premises of my own research as a whole is that a conceptual slippage pervades efforts to describe precarious employment, and this slippage clouds understandings of its contours, and it can impede our understanding of the phenomenon. In particular, even though they are related terms, precarious and non-standard employment are not and need not be synonymous. Non-standard forms of employment, such as part-time or temporary agency work for that matter, can be characterized by security and durability, and the closest proxy to the SER, a full-time, ostensibly ongoing employment, can also have high levels of insecurity. So to begin with the foremost concept, I define precarious employment as forms of work for remuneration characterized by dimensions of labor market insecurity and shaped often by workers' social location, their gender, their migration status, for example, as well as social context. People here have studied warehousing, construction, etc. So industry, geography, and occupation. One cannot understand precarious employment, however, I would argue, without reference to the standard employment relationship, or the SER, which I take to be a normative model of employment defined by a full-time continuous employment relationship where the worker has one employer, works under direct supervision, and has access to a social wage. In my larger work on the development of the SER in industrial market economies, I've demonstrated that the SER is intertwined historically with a particular gender contract, which I take to mean the social, legal, and political practices that surround the exchanges between breadwinning and caregiving. When the SER was at its height, it was sustained by a gender contract, taking different forms, of course, but defined by male breadwinning and female caregiving. And I also take the SER to rest on a particular conception of citizenship, or membership, assuming a correspondence between community belonging and territory. And at the height of the SER in countries like Canada and Norway, this meant nationally based employment and immigration laws and policies that may have had racialized effects in some cases, providing for open-ended employment relationships among citizens of the countries in which they work, while limiting many non-nationals to temporary engagements. So why are these concepts so important? Why define them with such precision? Well, the reason is that across countries, as many researchers have shown, the SER and its associated gender contract and citizenship boundaries has been dominant. And hence it has served as a reference point in identifying dimensions of labor market insecurity. At the same time, despite its preeminence in practice, the degree to which and the means through which the SER has been institutionalized have differed in different places. And this variation has affected the durability and the shape of the standard employment relationship, and then, of course, the forms that precarious employment takes. So I want to shift now to sketch the contours of the SER briefly and forms of employment often associated with precariousness in Norway and Ontario in their respective regional and national contexts. So as this slide shows, in Norway, full-time permanent employment has grown as a percentage of total employment over the last two decades, increasing from about 59% to about 64% of total employment in about 30-year period. And this trend distinguishes, 20-year period, and this trend distinguishes Norway from the EU 15. It also distinguishes Norway from Canada, since after having declined markedly in the 80s, full-time permanent employment stabilized at about 62% of total employment. Further attesting to its significance, this form of employment grew from just under 66% of total paid employment, that is excluding self-employment, and fully 69% over these two decades, whereas it stabilized in Canada as a whole, dropped slightly in Ontario, and declined markedly in the EU 15. A central explanation for this pattern is that in Canada and the EU 15, forms of employment differing from this closest proxy to what I call the SER have become more sizable, hence my reference to a tiered SER model, which increasingly characterizes Canada and especially its most populous province, Ontario, and also the EU as a whole. To elaborate a bit more on the emergence of this model in the EU 15, part-time employment has grown markedly in recent years, although temporary employment has grown too, and in Canada, temporary employment has expanded considerably. As this slide shows, part-time employment grew from just under 16% to approximately 23% of total employment between 1985 and 2015 in the EU 15. In turn, in Ontario, temporary employment rose from just under 8% to 11% of total employment between 1995 and 2015. Interestingly, however, in Norway, in the same period, temporary employment declined from 12% to just over 8% of total employment. At the same time, according to a national survey conducted by your FAFO to measure the share of temporary work in Norway, as of October 2016, this figure grew to 9.4%, suggesting that the changing regulations that you are encountering may be having an effect. Nevertheless, in comparison to the EU 15, but also to Canada and Ontario, Norway still has a relatively strong SER model. Its strength is in evidence quantitatively, where I have placed my emphasis so far. By the fact that full-time permanent employment still constitutes about two-thirds of total employment. It's also indicated qualitatively by the fact that full-time permanent employees' wage rates and levels of unionization remain relatively high in Norway vis-a-vis other OECD countries. Still, as several researchers in this audience demonstrate well, despite the more modest size of temporary employment in Norway in comparison to Canada and the EU 15, certain types demonstrate growth, such as temporary agency work. It is very difficult to estimate the size of this work, temporary agency work, and the sub-varieties of temporary employment that it involves, temporary agency work. And one reason is that most labor force statistics estimate its size on the basis of workers' self-reports, that is, workers' affirmative answers to both whether they identify as temporary and whether they name the employer, the agency as their employer. Yet, given the complexities in the legal arrangements surrounding temporary agency work, some scholars as well as industry analysts approach measurement of temporary agency work in a multifaceted way. So in addition to examining the size of temporary agency, the temporary agency labor force. Some look through the lens of person hours, and on this basis, David Jordis Lear and et al. Corroborate NHO statistics, and they find a steep rise in what they call person hours sold in Norway from less than 3 million per quarter at the beginning of 1996 to approximately 11 million person hours from 2011 onwards. An alternative measure of the significance of temporary agency work is revenue. In fact, revenue is arguably an ideal means of demonstrating growth because of the margin of error in labor force surveys. In Ontario, for example, the revenue generated by the employment services industry, which obtains most of almost two-thirds of its operating revenues from temporary staffing services, rose to $5.7 billion in 2012, up from $3.3 billion in 2002, representing an increase of fully 58% over a 10-year period. So such approaches demonstrate the significance of temporary agency work. At the same time, I should note that the size of temporary agency workforce in basic terms, that is based on these labor force surveys, I should still note them. And for Canada and Ontario here, when I speak of the trends, I want to emphasize that the public use microdata inhibits the precise estimation of temporary agency work by allowing for only a limited measurement of an additional category to which I've referred already, and that is the category of employment services, which includes some permanent and or fixed-term temporary employees, hence the deviation you may see between some of my estimates and some of those that will follow me. So where this measure is not available, I define temporary agency workers in Canada and Ontario as employees whose jobs are temporary, whose jobs fall within the management, administration, and other industry grouping, which encompasses employment services, and who fall within all major occupations, including manufacturing laborers and clerical occupations. So with these caveats, briefly put, in Norway, temporary agency work grew, in my estimation, from about 0.7% to 1.2% of total employment between 2005 and 2015. And in Ontario, it represented 1.2% of all employees in both of the years I have here on my slide, slightly higher than what you see in Canada on average. Where industrial composition is concerned, temporary agency work is more common in services than in goods-producing industries in Norway, a pattern that's less stark in Ontario. And where occupation is concerned, temporary agency work is more common in white than in blue-collar occupations in Norway, not surprisingly, given the history of this form of employment in the office sector here as elsewhere. Shifting to the demographic characteristics of temporary agency workers, well, of course, here in Norway in 2015, what I found anyway was about 58% of temporary agency workers were women and 42% were men. And this is a kind of a pattern that's consistent with Ontario past and present. Due to sample size issues, it's impossible to estimate the percentage of immigrants in temporary agency work. However, in Norway and Ontario, of course, immigrants are overrepresented in temporary employment. And as you see on this slide, for example, in Norway, based on data from 2014, whereas 13% of the employed population are immigrants, 17% of temporary agency workers are immigrants. Given these demographic features of temporary agency work, and in light of both its growth and its significance as a barometer of change, I would argue, the fact that temporary agency work tends to be relatively poorly paid vis-a-vis permanent employment, particularly for socially disadvantaged group, is noteworthy. For example, in 2015, whereas the median hourly wage for permanent employees in Norway was, as I understand it, 19 euros and 65 cents, it was 16 euros and 16 cents for temporary agency workers. And furthermore, whereas that year about 48% of permanent employees had hourly wages below the median hourly wage for all employees in Norway, the equivalent percentage was quite high or higher among temporary agency workers, fully 67%. This was the case especially for women, 86% of whom earned below the median that year. There is therefore little doubt that a segment of temporary agency work is definitively precarious. So since a central goal of this exercise that I'm engaged in here is to use Ontario's experience with regulating temporary agency work as a means of understanding the current and perhaps starting to predict the future challenges that may confront Norway, I want to offer a brief historical review of approaches to regulation in Ontario and then describe what I understand to be the deficiencies that we experience. So operating in parallel with developments internationally, approaches to regulation in Ontario proceeded through three phases in the 20th century: strict regulation, moderate regulation, and legitimization. The first phase, characterized by strict regulation, started in about 1914 with the adoption of an Employment Agencies Act that aimed to strictly regulate fees and limit abuses via licensing, and it provided for prohibiting any class of employment agency. The main rationale for this approach was to limit then exploitative practices, particularly affecting immigrants. In the second phase of regulation, mid-century, Ontario moderated its approach, removing prohibition as an option under the Employment Agencies Act on account partly of the construction of temporary agencies and the agency industry as halfway houses for housewives, that is, as gateways for women's entry into the labor force. And in the third phase, we saw legitimization. Ontario refrained from making any regulatory changes and extended legitimacy to temporary help agencies. At that time, agencies attempted to construct themselves as employers and did so effectively. Consistent with this development, in fact, in 2000, Ontario repealed its Employment Agencies Act, leaving a regulatory vacuum and ushering in a period when employment services, of which temporary work agencies are a part, experienced considerable growth in revenue. Turning to our most recent developments in the current phase of regulation in Ontario in the early 2000s, alongside the legitimation of temporary work agencies, there were two major inquiries into new forms of work that raised concern about the precarious character of temporary agency work. And in response to this concern, a new part of what we call our Employment Standards Act, so our Minimum Standards Act on temporary help agencies, was created and became law. And this took place in 2010. And modified since then, these regulations have produced mixed outcomes with regard to mitigating the precarious character of temporary agency work, which is, of course, part of the bottom tier of this tiered SER model that I've been talking about. So on the positive side, after taking the controversial step of constructing agencies as employers, new legislation introduced a number of obligations for agencies. This is a new legislation of 2010. It mandated that agencies must provide information in writing to workers about their assignments. It also began to prohibit agencies from charging temporary agency workers fees for employment services, from registration, for placement registration, CV writing, etc., and also for entering into an employment relationship with a client. It also barred agencies from restricting temporary agency workers from entering into an employment relationship with a client. In turn, it introduced a qualified prohibition on agencies charging a fee to a client in connection with entering into an employment relationship with the worker. And furthermore, removing previous exemptions, legislation extended public holiday pay and termination and severance to temporary agency workers on equivalent grounds to direct hires, which had not been the case before. And temporary agency workers came to be protected from reprisals by clients, and to a limited extent, joint and several liability was introduced, especially with respect to the failure to pay wages. On the flip side, the new approach to regulating temporary agency work in Ontario's Employment Agency Act is characterized by three major problems, as well as by several troubling omissions. To start with the problems, the first problem relates to scope. So the new part of the Employment Agency Act that covers temporary agency work covers temporary work help agencies exclusively. And in our context, to ensure that workers are not treated or don't have to pay for work. Even Ontario's Employment Agencies Act covered a much broader range of employment agencies. But under the new legislation, nothing precludes agencies outside of the definition of temporary help agencies from charging fees for regulation, placement, etc. The narrow scope of regulation is significant because Canada's employment services industry derives almost 40% of its revenue, or over a third of its revenue, from permanent placement and other services. And it's often hard to differentiate between permanent and temporary placement. A second problem pertains to exemptions. New legislation exempts home care workers. New legislation prevents home care workers subcontracted. By government subcontracted by the government through what are called community care access centers, and basically this exemption means that a large share of workers, temporary agency workers, in certain settings like home care settings, who are many of whom are women and immigrants, as is the case here in Oslo. From coverage. So I read a little bit in preparation for this meeting about agency-run nursing homes that have been perhaps paying below tariff wages. This group is exempt from this act, that is home care workers in Ontario. A third and fundamental problem relates to the qualifier or the loophole that we have around fee charging. Even though the approach to regulating temporary agency work in Ontario prohibits agencies from charging a fee to a client for entering into an employment relationship, agencies are permitted to charge fees to clients if they enter into an employment relationship with workers during the first 6 months of an assignment. Fees which are easily transferred, of course, to workers via a range of wage deductions. So this feature of Ontario's regime erects barriers to clients seeking to hire workers directly for the first 6 months of their assignment, and it may encourage agencies to cycle workers between short assignments. Turning to omissions, Ontario's approach to regulation, there are three, I think, that are particularly important, and one surrounds joint and several liability. I mentioned that it exists, but it only applies to unpaid wages, so a limited area, not holiday pay, overtime, etc. And second, currently absent, is any measure of equal treatment with workers recruited directly by clients in terms of pay and working conditions. This is particularly troubling given the low median hourly wages of temporary agency workers vis-a-vis permanent employees. However, in the last few weeks, it seems as there may be modest changes afoot in Ontario. Earlier this month, we're encountering a reform of our labor laws, and the government announced its intention to provide equal pay for equal work for temporary agency workers who perform substantially the same work of an employee of a temporary work agency. Hearings towards the bill are still to transpire. We will see what the outcome is, but this is on the table. The big problem, however, with this, as I'll talk about shortly, is that current proposals do not mandate that client firms' permanent employees serve as comparators. So there's a comparator issue here. The weak definition of the equivalent or comparable worker embraced in this legislative proposal thereby threatens to construct direct hire or fixed-term temporary workers as comparators, which could undermine the potential of equal treatment. And third, the enforcement provisions of Ontario's Employment Standards Act devoted to temporary help agencies remain a major problem. For example, research that I am conducting under the auspices of a different project which involves Ontario's Ministry of Labour and researchers from across Ontario and draws on administrative data, so state data, government data, shows that considering validated complaints to temporary help agencies between 2011-12 and 2015-16, over 50% had a violation for unpaid wages, and almost 40% had a violation for vacation pay or time, and 27% had a violation for termination pay. And yet rates of recovery are low, and part of the issue with this is of the triangular nature of the employment, which makes it very difficult to find and penalize offenders, especially in the absence of strong provisions for joint and several liability, which I mentioned. So I want to shift now then to talk about what I've learned about the Norwegian case and try to put it into put Ontario and Norway into conversation with one another. In my understanding, Norway has moved through four phases of regulation, and indeed, as David and his colleagues have offered, I'll draw on their table, and I won't say too much because it's been done. But essentially, you characterize the first phase as entailing an era of pre-regulation. Looks a lot like my chart, so it's quite similar parallel developments, where an embryonic industry operated through regulation. And they view the second phase as entailing prohibition with dispensation for certain sectors or geographic areas. And then they understand the third phase as an era of deregulation. And finally, although I'm sure this is up in discussion, they see the current phase, 2012 plus, I guess, or 2013 on, as a response to integration with EU law in this particular area. I'm not going to rehearse these phases. I've learned about them mainly from people in this audience. But from my perspective, there are several noteworthy features that nevertheless characterize the current conditions in Norway's first phase, my perspective as an outsider to this context. The first feature is that temporary agency work is now a legitimate form of employment. As I understand it, in 2000, your Working Environment Act legalized what is known as hiring out. I had to learn all this language, so if I confuse it, I apologize. By provider enterprises, both the temporary work agencies and other firms, including those whose main purpose, that is less than 50%, is not to hire out. And at the same time, it made it permissible to hire in, with a few exceptions and limits. Specifically with respect to temporary work agencies, to circumvent the erosion of bipartite employment relationships, the WEA made it permissible for firms to hire in temporary agency workers to the same extent as fixed-term or direct temporary employees if the work is of a temporary nature and involves a replacement of another worker on temporary absence. And here I'm pretty much quoting the English translation of your act. Historically, hiring in of temporary employees that are direct fixed-term and temporary agency workers, that is, non-permanent employees of other firms, was limited, as I understand it, to temporary need, and temporary employees were required to perform tasks distinct from the normal business, and legislation also mandated that employers obtain unions' permission in instances when temporary employment was required beyond a pre-established duration. However, reforms in 2015 permitted the use of temporary direct employment, what I understand as fixed-term employment, for unspecified reasons for up to 12 months while limiting its condition-free use to a maximum of 15% of firm's total workforce. These reforms also mandated that at the end of the agreement period, so that 12 months, when a direct temporary worker is not offered continued employment, the employer or firm shall be subject to a quarantine period of 12 months during which the firm may not make new appointments or hire in. Additionally, workers who have been temporarily employed for more than four consecutive years for the reason that either that the work is temporary and more than 3 years when hired to replace another person or are directly employed under the new rule of direct temporary employment for 12 months, these people shall be deemed to be permanently employed so that the provisions concerning termination of employment relationships apply. So there is this, seems to be this transition in your laws. In terms of hiring in of permanent employees of other firms, from undertakings other than those whose object is to hire out labor, that is not directly hired temporary workers and not temporary agency workers. In 2000, your WEA introduced a 10% limit and a time limit of 1 year unless otherwise agreed to by the employees of the hirer. Now, as I understand it, the latest 2015 reforms maintain these limits. At the same time, while the 2015 reforms seem to hold the line on temporary agency work to the extent that they maintain pre-existing conditions, that is the temporary need requirement, They do so without subjecting this form of temporary employment to a 12-month time limit or a maximum of 15% of employees of an employer's undertaking. A second unique feature of temporary agency work in Norway, to me as an outsider, is that with the transposition of the EU directive on temporary agency work is now subject to the principle of equal treatment. In practice, as I understand it, this means with respect to pay and working conditions, with the exception of employer-sponsored pension schemes. And so temporary work agencies are responsible for ensuring that workers receive treatment equivalent to, and here I quote the Act, conditions that would have applied if the worker had been recruited directly by the user undertaking to perform the same work. And they do so with a few exceptions, derogation by collective agreement, as I understand it, for example. So notable here, too, is the absence of a requirement that the comparator be a permanent worker recruited directly by the user undertaking, going against the grain of what I understand to be Norway's historical commitment to the bipartite employment relationship and to this strong SER model. As with the current legislative proposal in Ontario, this weak definition of a comparable worker could contribute to lowering the bottom in wages and working conditions. A risk that is amplified by loosening limits on direct temporary employment, which is the reason I reviewed them. I raised this potential danger with the EU Directive on Temporary Agency Work, in fact, in my 2010 book, Managing the Margins. That said, as I understand it, in practice in Norway, and I understand this from Anders, collective agreements regulate the comparator and that this has worked well in the past. The third noteworthy feature is the adoption of joint and several liability for user undertakings with respect to the payment of wages, holiday pay, and several holiday pay and any other remuneration that is pursuant to equal treatment, except in instances of bankruptcy. Now, in this case, the exception for bankrupt enterprises is concerning for me, based on my previous research, given that in my experience studying temporary agency work in Ontario and elsewhere, temporary work agencies and small enterprises in particular in this context have relatively high bankruptcy rates. Additionally, at present in my reading of a recent court case involving construction workers, there seems to be, and perhaps I'll learn more about it in the next couple of days, a debate about whether or not temporary agency workers are permanent employees of the agency, and if so, if they should be paid between assignments, as is the case, I understand it, in Sweden. So viewed collectively, these features suggest to me that the current phase of regulation in Norway might be characterized as regulated flexibility. On the flexibility side of this equation, temporary agency work is now a legitimate form of employment, and it is also perhaps poised to expand. One reason is the weak definition of the comparable worker to temporary agency workers in implementing this equal treatment provision. And another is the relaxed time limits on direct temporary employment alongside the inclusion of very limited or very few limits, except for the requirement that the hirer make them permanent after 3 years of continuous utilization, and also no percentage limits on the utilization of temporary agency workers. At the same time, I speak of regulated flexibility as the emergent regime does not jettison the strong SER model completely, which obviously has long characterized the new Norwegian context. Hence, here in Norway, there are clearly some efforts to retain the SER as the norm substantively through setting these time and percentage limits on condition-free direct temporary employment and time and percentage limits on the hiring in of employees from undertakings other than those whose object is to hire out, as well as the mandate that both direct temporary employees and temporary agency workers must become permanent after 3 or 4 years. So the decision to mandate equal treatment regarding both pay and working conditions in connection with the hiring out of temporary work agencies is also promising in this regard. Still, while mitigating precarious temporary agency work and precariousness as in the labor market as a whole and where this is concerned, the Ontario case, I think, reveals potential pitfalls of Norway's emergent approach. So broadly, if the aim is both to limit the spread of precarious temporary agency work and to prevent the emergence of a tiered SER model across the labor force, such that precarious aspects of the employment relationship that are characteristic of much temporary agency work, not all of it, but much of it, like subpar wages and low rates of unionization, relatively speaking, come to characterize a greater variety of so-called non-standard forms of employment, there is a need to apply strict time and percentage limits, as well as quarantine periods, to all forms of temporary employment, direct and indirect, involving hiring in from both firms for whom hiring out is and is not their central business. I didn't go through all the distinctions. Your act is pretty complicated, but these distinctions can be very important. To put it slightly differently, if a strong SER model is to continue to characterize the Norwegian context, then the absence of percentage and time limits around temporary agency work may be untenable. There is, in addition, a need to adopt a robust approach to equal treatment as a means of encouraging hirer firms to resort to temporary forms of employment exclusively on a temporary basis. And here I mean introducing measures to ensure that the definition of the comparable worker in Norway does not undermine permanency as the norm. There is, of course, also the alternative of going the route of Sweden, a direction in which this recent court decision addressing the situation of construction workers seems to gesture, by suggesting that if temporary work agencies want to be permanent employers, they must provide regular pay and regular guaranteed working hours or paid vacation in lieu. As the expansion of temporary employment of various sorts in Ontario shows, without such decisive action, this central feature of the standard employment model or the normative model of employment, that is permanency, is threatened with dilution and ultimately dissolution, perhaps. Without booing the SER or supporting it in some way by both limiting temporary employment of various sorts and upholding meaningful equal treatment for workers who find themselves in forms of employment that deviate from this SER model, it seems that Norwegians may be poised to experience downward pressure on wages of the order and the magnitude that characterizes Ontario. And that's the conclusion of my comparison. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lea, for that very interesting and provocative talk. We have room for one or two questions. So if anyone would like to ask Lea a question. No, maybe we can take more questions after Per's talk as well, which will be related. But before that, we have a small gift from the University College. This is a topper called Solaris Turbo, which is Latin for and is made by the artist Cecilia Gindum, and it's inspired by the topper's history, and it's used as a metaphor for scientific explanation.
Thank you very much.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you.